Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anazal Ministries podcast.
What can the different deities and religious systems of Dungeons & Dragons teach us about the world and our own faith? Guys, this is Systematic Geekology. We are the priests of the geeks. As part of our religion series, we're continuing on by exploring the religions of the world, the religions of the fandoms that we experience and enjoy. Today, as I stated, we're doing D&D, getting back into it by we. I mean, of course, myself, Christian Ashley, joined by, of course, the most handsome co-host of all time, the most splendorous, the most wonderful, God himself appointed, TJ Blackwell. How's it going, TJ?
Good.
All right. And of course, we also have a special guest today. You've heard his voice before. You're going to hear it again because we enjoy it so much. We have Father Jonathan. How are you doing, Father?
Doing well. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. So, gentlemen, what have you all been geeking out on recently?
What if I said Valorant?
Well, it's a good thing there's such a large distance between us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you at least enjoying it?
What if I said Counter-Strike?
Well, it's at least something different.
Yeah. No, it's Valorant. It's VCT, man. Pro play.
Thank you for continuing to disappoint me, my good friend TJ.
Always.
Father Jonathan, how about you?
I'm on this slice of life anime kick right now.
Nice.
Doing like deep dives, trying to find things that like aren't high school romances. But I found a few good ones. I just listened to this interesting one, A Sign of Affection. It's about a young woman who's deaf and like a budding romance with a handsome foreigner. So it was nice. It was a sweet opportunity to live vicariously through another person. Yeah, a total break from what I do in my day to day life.
Fair enough. Yeah, I, on the other hand, just got a new TV for the dorm room, and it comes with all the bells and whistles of the free apps, and one of them led me to the Mystery Science Theater 3000 channel, which it has been some time since I've watched those. They just bring me back. The jokes are solid. The movies they watch are horrible, and I love every moment of it.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. It's what, the Pluto TV or whatever? There's just like a channel dedicated to like every show you can imagine.
Yes, pretty much.
Ours is always on Kitchen Nightmares.
All right. Well, with all that in mind, it's time to get into the meat and potatoes of this situation. We're talking Dungeons & Dragons, D&D, and our experiences in it, but also how the religious systems are set up, some of the deities that are involved in here. We're not all experts here. Some of us have been DMing for longer. Some of us have just been playing. It's okay. What we bring to the table is the fun we had in those journeys. So, gentlemen, we did an episode led by TJ about 2 years ago. Let's fill each other in on how our experiences have changed since then.
Man, was it 2 years ago?
Thereabouts.
That's crazy.
Man, I'm getting so old.
Yeah, that's about how our experiences have changed.
It's just getting harder to roll the dice.
Thank God there's automated ones on the like the D&D website.
Yeah,
and we're all linked in. you just type in all the dice that you need, and it rolls for you.
Yeah,
excellent.
My wrist just can't take it anymore. Mm-hmm. but really, I would say less in-person D&D, but a lot more virtual D&D since then, particularly Baldur's Gate.
Okay. I'll include that. That makes a lot of sense. Made by the same company.
Yeah. It's a fantastic game.
Oh, yeah. Father Jonathan, how about you?
So I've kind of predominantly done it remotely. The only time I did it in person was like right before COVID. And then we shifted in a little chat that Christian and I were having before we started. I mentioned that like it was an international thing. Like we had guys from Singapore, I think, and New Zealand, and California, and then some local people doing it together. I haven't had an opportunity. I took over the parish here. We have like 1,200 families, so my time is limited. So I haven't been able to engage and play as often as I'd like, maybe like a few times over the last couple of years. But like I still am in the Discord with the guys that are playing. So like I know where they are. And one of these days, Florgan the Elf is going to show up randomly and cause havoc with his...
As is tradition.
Yeah, his slow, not so slow descent into insanity as a character, and his evil twin brother Florkin sometimes shows up when we do limited campaigns. So one of these days they're going to show up together, and it's going to be wild.
Yeah, I think since I kind of guest play because I'm not available as much as everyone else in the group in a Jujutsu Kaisen D&D group.
Sounds awesome.
It's pretty sick. Not really related to what we're going to talk about today, but...
No, it's close enough. I'll allow it. Me, on the other hand, I have done very little DMing since the last time we spoke on this. I've been a part of a group of old college friends. We meet up, you know, maybe two Saturdays a month online virtually to play. We stalled one campaign that we're going to do kind of a... Not a spinoff, babies, but we're going to move forward in time with new characters for that one. But we've been doing the Call of the Netherdeep. Is that what it's called? That Matthew Mercer did for 5e. I've been really enjoying that. We're very close to the end game there. So I'm ready to start the new campaign and get into some new shenanigans along the way. So with that all in mind, if you're out there in the audience and wondering, how does religion factor into D&D? Isn't that just satanic nonsense? No, actually. In fact, it's not. There is a whole culture inside of D&D where you can choose to align yourself with certain gods and goddesses or even demons. I know. We'll get there in a second. It's okay. Just don't turn your phone off. Don't throw it against the wall. We'll get there. Or angels or other things that look like deities. You have your arch phase and stuff like that. And in the process, you can kind of build a character around an idea like that. Or you can be a cleric of Lathander. You could be a Oathbreaker Paladin of Bane or what have you. There's so much you can do. So throwing this question out to everyone. Have we ever had a character with a patron god or goddess or one heavily associated with one? And why did we choose the ones we did, if so?
I have, actually. We did my closest friends and I, we did D&D for a long time. And we had a few different campaigns, all with the same general set of characters. You know, we did a little time skip, whatever. But power creep is a very real thing and one we're extremely guilty of. So after we hit level 20 in the first campaign, of course, the second campaign, we're going to become the pantheon of Faerun, naturally. That's the logical progression. I'm going to show you guys because no one else gets to see it today. But this one is the reincarnation of Tyr in Faerun, the god of justice.
Nice.
And that's because he was raised by a city guardsman and just grew up with justice as a big part of his personality and tearing down Faerun's corrupt justice system. Big fan of him.
Very good. Father John
is on my debit card.
So I've not done a character that like specifically aligned with a particular deity. But the characters that I have played kind of maybe riffing off of myself just as a religious scholar, Like they've been scholars of religion, just kind of generally. And so I've made that part of my character's capacities to just have a pretty extensive academic scholarly knowledge of the pantheon, which has helped out a lot, because when we've come in to parts of the stories where that was helpful, you know, I did this like short read up on things, or if I like something, sometimes our DM tried to be sneaky and like pulled from lore that was like semi-religious elsewhere. That I actually do.
Nice.
Sometimes I have to pretend that my character doesn't have the knowledge that I do sometimes, yeah. Which is really funny.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the quality. And then like even the language choices that I had reflected like a desire to have my characters have knowledge. Like I think I spoke Abyssal, but like there's like no reason to otherwise.
That's one of the hardest parts, I think, about playing D&D as someone who has DM'd a fair bit, is seeing like encounters and thinking like, oh, I can't know how to deal with this. Mm-hmm. I pretend I do not know what the problem is. Or being in an encounter and being like, this shouldn't be happening. We shouldn't be fighting this. This is completely out of our wheelhouse. This is CR's way too high.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Divorcing yourself from that knowledge is extremely hard, especially when you go over the stat sheets and everything.
Yeah.
And you know, like, oh, obviously these are immune to fire, but my character doesn't know that.
Yeah. Or a shambling mound. Because, like, there's no way your character knows that it's immune to electricity.
Now, why would you?
Yeah, hit it with lightning bolt.
For me, I actually started off my D&D journey in 4E with a character who tied himself to a patron goddess. And I had my Dector, Kilian MD, a little private joke that now that John's a part of the channel, I can say it stands for Dr. Killjohn MD, just as a private little joke between us. And he associated with the goddess of knowledge, Ioun. And I always enjoyed... because this is baby D&D player. I'm starting to read up on the lore of everything, go, oh, I love pursuing knowledge. So I'm going to base this character around me because it's my first character and I'm not going to think beyond that. So joining with her to always be like encouraging people to share truth, to get knowledge and stuff like that was a fun part of the campaign. I've included him in my own campaigns where he's moved on to become a leader of a nation. That's fun. Then other than that, another campaign I played with some friends back home a couple of years ago where we all started growing up in an orphanage together. Like we actually role played growing up and getting our classes and stuff like that. I played twins who I had talked with my DM beforehand. We were going to have one of them die off, both of them being the only surviving descendants of the time god. Oh, goodness gracious. What was his name? No, it was like something with a C. It was a very obscure one so that no one would know what it is. And I ended up playing the girl twin, everyone thinking I was the boy twin in that one. And there was a special curse put on me where I could never say my father's name. I had to roll from a list of gods for a D100, and everyone would hear a different god's name. So they would be saying, hey, you know, your dad is Ogma, right? And it's like, I would say his name and it wouldn't be right. It was a lot of fun because no one on the table knew except for me and the DM why that was a thing. And then learning, oh, there's a curse around this was a lot of fun. Unfortunately, that campaign ended before we could actually get to anywhere really fun, but it is what it is. And currently the one I'm about to join, I have a character who in a world where the gods have kind of been silent ends up as part of a religious war, becoming one of the few who are called by the gods to join in this conflict, called by the demons to join in this conflict. And her name is Saya Morphe, I think, the goddess of like nobility and raising people up to that standard. So not to go too more about that, because I know some people in that group listen to this, so I'm not going to say any more, but there's that. There's multiple ways you can go about this. Go ahead. You have something you want to say, TJ?
No, I was just saying, it's smart. Keep the secrets.
Yeah. multiple ways you can do this. You can choose to be, you know, someone who hates God, someone who doesn't even believe in them in these worlds. And like, you would think, oh, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But no, there's a legitimate way to do that. You can just see them as some higher level being, like an archfey who just looks like a god or something like that. Yeah, D&D is one of those fun games where, like, depending on who you're playing with, a ton of really fun things can happen, depending on how creative you are, depending on how creative the players around you are, the DM is. It's a ton of fun. So as far as the deities themselves are concerned, we're not going to go through a list of every single one because there are over 100. Remember, I had that D100 list. I did not include every deity because there were more. So we're just going to go briefly over some of the other pantheons. Probably the most familiar to everyone would be Faerun. Now, TJ, do you want to take that away?
Yeah, so Faerun is the most common, I would say. Well, like most campaigns these days are running Faerun, but Faerun also is the one that pulls the most from real life mythology. You have Tyr, Baal, Bane, Asmodeus. This is the one where when you're hopping into a game and you hear Asmodeus is here, you already know that's a problem because it's Asmodeus and you're familiar with the name. I was reading the list earlier just because there's an absurd number. There's an absurd amount of lore. Recently obtaining much fame is Saloon and Shar because of Baldur's Gate 3, which, you know, great quest lines. I love Baldur's Gate 3. But like I said earlier, mentioned Ogma. Ogma was the big bad evil guy of one of our campaigns. He was a neutral god, but not to us. He was just a hater, I guess. But it's your classic, like, oh, god of knowledge, god of justice, beyond Mystra, you know, god of magic. You get, beyond that, a lot of lore and interconnectivity between these deities that I could not possibly explain. They go through, like, a war. They're related to each other. There's a second war. Some of them just get, like, demoted from godhood. It's honestly kind of insane how in-depth just the pantheon is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is one of those things, like, as TJ mentioned, if there's, like, a baseline list of deities, a pantheon for D&D, it's probably going to be Faerun, your Sword Coast and all that. Like, as time has marched on within Dungeons & Dragons, they've kind of amalgamated different pantheons together. Like 5e is very streamlined, so you get multiples from different worlds and campaigns that kind of like are just there in the book, so you will know, okay, this is who we're, this is the goddess of blank, this is the god of blank. That way, if you're choosing a cleric or a paladin or anyone in general, you can say, oh, I align with that, so I'm going to make them a god, my god. It's a ton of fun in all this aspect. Father Jonathan, you have anything you want to add?
No, I think I mentioned before, like, I'm a dabbler, so like I'm like sitting here at your feet as a student. But one of the beautiful things is like the world building that happens, drawing from real world sources and kind of seeing it play out in a world. Like I think the version I did was kind of the amalgamation one, which was really cool because it kind of gave me a taste of everything. It did leave me kind of thirsting for a little bit more like deep dive into like a particular world.
So. Yeah. Even in universe, they're like, yeah, the Faerunian pantheon is at least four different pantheons merged into one.
Pretty much. And that's the fun too, depending on who you're working with or if you're the one in charge. Like, if all these are amalgamated together, like we've suggested, like how does Baal interact with Palandine, who comes from Dragonlance? Like, would they have fought in the past? Probably likely. Like, how would their worshipers interact with one another? Would they offer quests in the game to say, hey, there's this group of paladins here, we want you to take them down. Or, hey, there's this group of cultists here, like, go and wipe them out. They're not doing anything good. And in the hands of a really good DM, you can have that interreligious conflict being played in a world where this is exactly what would happen, because I can look at our own world and see multiple times through history where people who believe in certain gods over here and the people who believe in certain gods over here are going to be in conflict because, well, my god's the best god, so obviously you can't be right. And we'll get into that a little more later on, probably. But if you learn from history, if you learn from religion, you're going to find fun ways to interact with the things they offer you, because there's no like a blueprint for this is exactly how you should run this god in your campaign or this demon lord or what have you. And it's so much fun just to interact with all that, to play with it. So if you guys are okay, we'll move on from Faerun over to Greyhawk.
I'm out.
Now, yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm out. I don't know anything about the Greyhawk deities.
Well, Greyhawk, I remember the name of the god of time earlier. He is an obscure god from Greyhawk. It is Sindor, who was the daddy of my character there in that one campaign. But it's a very minor god. This is one I'm not as familiar with. And once again, when you kind of, there's a whole hodgepodge of pantheons and deities. Like, you can even include the Greek pantheon, the Norse pantheon, Egyptian pantheon, even more. There's Celtic gods they throw in there as suggestions. Like, that's a fun thing. It's like, if you know your mythology, if you know your history, or and you know religion, like, you can throw all these things in there and just have the world interplay with them. Now, I'm not as familiar with Greyhawk either. I more dabble with it, but I do know, you know, some of the ones, more popular ones more recently, stuff like Critical Role, and like you get Pelor, you get Kord, you know, Pelor being the sun god. You have Kord, who's a god of strength, multiple things. Yeah, actually, Father Jonathan, have you ever watched Critical Role?
I have not.
That's okay. There are hundreds upon hundreds of episodes that are 3 to 4 hours long. If you don't have the time to devote for it, I don't blame you. And in fact, I kind of left campaign 3 a while ago. It just wasn't clicking with me. Are you caught up, DJ?
No. God, no. I don't have that kind of time.
So that's probably all I have to say on Greyhawk. So let's move on over to Dragonlance. This is the one where Paladin comes from. You know, Chislev, who's kind of like this bestial god of like instinct and the earth and all this. And you have Chumash as well, kind of like an example of an evil god of, you know, just the world. His kind of ideology is fatalism and how things are just going to happen, so just accept them. So TJ, you have anything you want to add for Dragonlance?
Yeah, I feel like if we had been making this 10 years ago, 8, 9 years ago, but probably like 10 now. Yeah, like 5e came out in 2014. But Dragonlance, I feel like, was the most popular for a long time because of the novels, the R.A. Salvatore novels. And, you know, he deep dives into that, Dragonlance, literally. He dives into that. But it's not a pantheon I'm super familiar with. I'll see the names every once in a while, and I'm like, okay, well, let me just look up that really quick. But Habakkuk is one of the gods in Kryn in Dragonlance. I think that's pretty funny.
Yes. Yeah, of all the names to just take out, one of the, you know, a fine book of the Minor Prophets, but just make him a god in that setting, in a sense.
Yeah, make him the god of animals.
I mean, sure.
Sure.
Why not?
Whatever, dude. Yeah.
Did you ever read those novels?
I've read like one Dragonlance novel. And then
I haven't
always
read them at all.
Yeah, I kind of gravitated towards other things. I don't know. And when it comes to reading, I'm a less of a high fantasy fan.
Okay. But you were about to say something else before I interrupted you.
I forgot. No.
No, that's fine.
I feel like the Dragonlance pantheon is a lot more streamlined than the others, I feel like. Except I don't know anything about Greyhawk, so maybe Greyhawk's smaller. But it's a very short list of deities. And I can imagine that would make it a lot easier to live in a world like that.
Mm-hmm. Hello, friends. If you enjoy Systematic Ecology, a great way to support us and to keep us moving forward into the future is to be a patron on our Patreon network. If you're a Patreon, then you get live access to our YouTube exclusives like Comic Book Ketchup and Manga Mustard, Drinks with Tejas, and also some extra content there with our companion series to go along with our annual theme. If you're a patron, you get exclusive merch like t-shirts and handbags and mugs. There's also a bonus extra question that has extra content. In each episode, we go deeper into our faith and the questions that we're wrestling with, but we also do this extra question to jump in and share about, and patrons get to hear how we answer that question. There's discounts on our store. You get access to any future online D&D campaigns. You can easily access all of our Patreon content through our Spotify page where it says exclusive content for subscribers. That could be you, folks. And all that being said, you get the satisfaction that you help us keep the lights on and keep us moving forward with our software, our marketing, our equipment, staying current in the podcast game. We love Systematic Geekology. We hope you do too. Support us moving forward. Thank you for all that you are. We know there's a lot of great choices and content out there, and you choose to listen to Systematic Geekology. Thanks, folks. We love you. Peace.
And if you're out there right now and you're screaming, why aren't you talking about this guy? Why aren't you talking about this goddess? Well, chances are it's because I haven't really encountered them in a game. And like, yeah, I can read about them. I can appreciate the lore, but I want to represent them as well as possible. And I know some of us haven't played that much. And that's okay. Like, we're just moving in to do an overview of some of the systems in place here, not the totality of everything that they represent. So I kind of threw this fourth option out there as well. And these focus on multiple pantheons of multiple different, you know, universes and the like. That's just like your non-human deities. And I think they're interesting. And that in these settings, there is no, we in this world, we have one species that is capable of sapiency that we are aware of, that being humans. But in your fantasy worlds, you have dragonborn, you have orcs, you have elves, you have so many of these critters running around talking and thinking and speaking like you in certain aspects. Well, of course there would be gods representing them, you know, if you're making this without one god being there creating all things. So what's your take on all this?
Yeah, I find that like conceptually that's very interesting. I mean, like even culturally speaking, like if we look at like here in reality, like religious traditions form and respond to questions and needs of particular cultural groups and regions of the world. So to see that like kind of expand outward, I know when we played, it was the like our big foible were the cult of Tiamat, and to like see all these dragonborns and cultists that are like, you know, but then also humans as well, like following after Tiamat. I don't even know if that's part of this kind of pantheon.
Oh, yeah, that
here
perfectly fits.
Yeah, but it's interesting because then you kind of like you explore the way in which, because then there's like a degree of like an experience of like colonialism that happens like with these with these groups kind of entering into and forcing down, and like, you know, you start interacting with characters within the world that are just kind of like suffering the oppression of these groups as they're trying to force their religious perspective on them. And it sounds like we talk about it as if it's fantasy, but it's also can be commentary on the realities in which we live. And like the more capable of the DM is, the more almost even philosophical that they can get into it when you, and like sociopolitical and religious, they can get into the story. So it's, I find it very interesting. And this is across the board, not just for this particular yeah, subgroup.
Yeah. I really like the non-human deities part because it is realistic, you know. Different races have different cultures, have different gods. Makes a ton of sense. For every human god, there's a dwarf, an elf, a dragonborn equivalent. And I'm really glad you brought up Tiamat, because those, I feel like Tiamat and Bahamut are special. They're just like, yeah, these are, you know, deities you might not, y'all might not have seen y'all's deities. Tiamat and Bahamut, they're just really strong dragons.
There's a section of the world I normally play in when I, at least from my DM in, where there was a lake, a giant lake, and now there's no longer a giant lake. It's a lot of land that didn't exist before. And the players found out the reason for that is, after a fight with Tiamat, Bahamut almost got killed and rested in that area, becoming that land for the past, you know, couple decades. And so part of it was, hey, you know, entire cities have sprung up here. Do we have the right to waken him from his rest now that he's slumbered and, you know, become powerful again? And it was so fun to see them interact with that idea of people worship him, and Bahamut is typically your good dragon deity, but if he were to awaken, countless thousands would die. Like, and seeing them wrestle with that moral question, oh man, that was so much fun. They eventually found a way where they were able to plane shift all the people away. It caused someone to sacrifice their life, but they were willing to do it to make sure those thousands of people lived. But I found, because I had no actual answer for what they were doing, I was just curious to see what they would make of it. And they found a way to make it work.
I would have killed all those people.
I didn't need to hear you say that to know that's exactly what you would have done.
It's worth it.
One of my characters certainly would have, and the other one might have done so by accident.
Yep. Yep. I think I have a couple that would have found a way to make it work, but I also have a couple that definitely would have just woken Bahamut up. One of them would have probably like dropped a bunch of flyers that said, hey, you have like 4 hours to evacuate. But after those 4 hours, he was definitely waking the dragon up.
I just got this glimpse of a completely separate storyline, but we were doing it with one of those, like, you know, side quest of the week type things when we wanted a break from the main story. One of the guys who was usually the DM was like playing as a character, and he just played him so annoying. And I had my like kind of evil version of my character, and we were about to face the final boss of the little episode that we were doing, and he was standing right in front of me, and I just unleashed my most powerful attack to destroy the enemy, and I vaporized him in the process. And yeah, that's the one that would have destroyed the city to move the story along.
Nice. So we've done a brief overview of some of the pantheons. Once again, not totally in depth. Maybe we could do it later on, maybe not. For right now, on this idea, we kind of brought it up a couple of times in here, that we had the whole satanic panic back in the day. In the 80s, it has not left. It's not as heightened as it used to be, but there are still people around here who would more than likely love to rekindle the fire and have it become a thing again. Of this, you're worshiping other gods by doing this. By playing this game, you're actually worshiping demons. And it comes from a good place of, hey, hold on, let's make sure what our children are doing, what people are doing is, you know, okay, that they're not actually doing anything wrong. But it then got heightened and misused by and abused by other people into something far beyond what it ever should have been. And in D&D, one of the core concepts, like you mentioned before, is that you can worship and have patron gods and goddesses that runs. It is very antithetical to the Christian walk. So do you guys think, is it hypocritical for Christians to participate in or organize campaigns where other gods are being worshipped in the setting?
No.
How so?
Well, there's a few ways to kind of like worm your way around it, which if you want to take the coward's way out, you can do. Or you can just say, this is a work of fiction. But if you don't want to say that, you can just say these are all aspects of the one true God that we're choosing to name and honor separately.
Yeah.
So when you're worshiping Tash, you were actually worshiping me, Aslan.
Yeah.
I was on an episode last night on the new Taylor Swift album, and I mentioned this same thing, so it's fresh in my mind. So St. Basil the Great, Basil of Caesarea, wrote a series of letters to young men on the value of learning Greek letters, but it's not just about learning the Greek language, so I would recommend that as well. But it was about, it was really about like what was contained or what was utilizing those Greek letters, which is classical Greek philosophy. And there's a religious aspect to classical Greek philosophy as well. It's a whole life of the philosopher. But then on top of that, there's also like the mythology of the ancient Greek culture. And he often said, like, there are things that we can learn even from the most evil aspects of what's presented in those realities. We who are spiritual, who read it, like prepared for it, can see in that which is wrong. Our consciences can allow us to how would I put it? Reaffirm our own ethical, moral selves in confronting with like the evils that can exist in this literature, or the excesses of the deities of classical mythology. We consume lots of media, and the reality is, like, as much as we get into character when we play these things, we are ultimately, it's not just a work of fiction, like, we are participating in the creation of a work of fiction. Like, our own choices as we kind of cultivate our characters, we are writing a story together as a group at any given time. And like, we are not worshiping, like, because if we are playing characters, like, and granted, there are those, you know, in certain like religious, maybe on certain like further traditionalist ends of the spectrum that might say that like acting is problematic if you're going to participate in certain genres or something like that, which I could understand. Like, I would say that we want to be mindful of that. But in reality, just like we are not worshiping, we are playing characters and playing out a story that we are creating in the moment that exists within a world that has these deities. And when we leave it behind, we are leaving behind that story, but we've left behind having wrestled with questions like, do you destroy a city or do you save a city? Do you torture or do you just, you know, bind and try to coerce, you know, like these real moral questions. And then to play the character that, like, if you're going to play a character that aligns in a darker way, then also being able to reflect on, like, what was it like to think as a character that way, and then it provides us an opportunity to, you know, have, you know, compassion and understanding when we confront it, because, like, you recognize the moral qualms that a particular character has to go through, or you can play into, you know, what it is to participate in a religious, to have a religious ideology in a world that you're existing in this moment. So.
Yeah. It's also, if that's something that makes you squeamish, if you don't want to participate in that world where other people are worshiping other deities, play as an evangelist. Play as a Christian evangelist and go out there and proselytize to the people. You can do that. I don't know why you would do that, but you can. It'd be pretty funny.
I agree with my co-host here. This is a question I wrestled with when I first started playing. Was, if I said, yeah, I'm worshiping Ayun in character, but does that mean in any way is my heart affected by that? And I think you need to ask those questions about yourself. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the answer is no. I am, like Father Jonathan said, just playing a character. I'm just acting. I'm just having fun. I don't actually believe Ayun is real or anything like that. But there's aspects from that I can take. Like, hey, knowledge is a good thing. Knowledge is a great gift from God. So to have a God whose aspect is based around knowledge, well, that's an aspect of God you can look at in this world and say, oh, yeah, knowledge needs to be spread. Knowledge needs to be something we seek after to understand and make sure that these evil secrets in the world don't cause further harm. Yeah, that's great. And one of the things when I became a DM, I told myself, okay, how am I going to handle characters worshiping other gods, given that everyone in the group was at church and a friend of mine there. So I came up with, hey, you know what? If I believe in multiverse theory and I believe in the idea that, you know, God is God throughout the entire multiverse, well, who said Jesus isn't going to show up somewhere in some fantasy realm as whatever race he decides to there and die on a cross or whatever is applicable in that world scenario to where a group props up, and I have the followers of the sun, which I totally didn't steal from that Star Trek episode, Bread and Circuses, but I have that in the world. There, Christianity exists in an alternate form here, and players can choose to engage with it, or I can choose to ignore it. That's up to them. That's a way to like quiet my own fears and doubts that I put in there that, hey, has affected the world and something I build around things. But at the end of the day, I could have never included that in there, and I still would have been fine. There would not have been a questionnaire when it's my time before the judgment throne, and God looked at me and said, I don't know, that time you had Sindor as your patron god, you know, gonna have to wait in line, buddy. It's like, that's not how salvation works.
That's right on St. Peter's ledger as D&D player.
Yeah, there's far worse things on that ledger than any amount of time I played D&D, so I'm not too worried about.
Yeah, we don't need to go into detail about all those. But yeah, we're laughing about it, but really, if you think about it logically, is that something God is going to care about? Now, if you're actually going out there, and there have been groups, a very small minority, that do believe more pagan ideals, that do actually follow more satanic theistic Satanists versus actual LeVay loser Satanists, and have used D&D as a vessel for that, yes. Less than 1% of the players who've ever played, but it exists in the world. You're right. Good for you. Let's talk about the 99% who are actually having fun with the game. So that's something you can go, okay, well, is the group I'm in, do they support stuff like that? Chances are, the answer is no. So just have fun. Now, I believe it was TJ who brought up earlier people being squeamish about this in our churches. And I'm sure there are plenty of people in our churches who are. Like, so how can we help those very same members who are more squeamish about D&D understand it better while also working alongside their concerns and letting them feel validated?
I haven't had the experience, I'm a pastor, a priest at a giant Greek Orthodox community. Can't say that the majority of even the more traditional people in my community even know that there is such a thing as Dungeons and Dragons. So I haven't had to confront this in this particular way, but pastorally, I've always, I used to teach classes and do retreats on like different things in like pop culture and spirituality and stuff like that. And, I would always, lead into, and this is like the pastoral response, is hear people out, hear their concerns. You just validate it by saying, like, I can understand if that's what you're thinking about this, why this might make you feel this way. You might have fear or anxiety around it, concerns about like if your child is participating in this fandom or that fandom. But like what I did was I would go to the stories and say like, well, what's the, again, going back to that St. Basil discussion before, like he talked about how we, bees will go to the good pollen to produce the good, that produce the good nectar to create good honey. And they will avoid the bad ones. And whereas flies will go to the waste, the rubbish, the dung, and exist on that. And, so we want to strive to be the bee. So, but there is always a possibility of in anything, I mean, within reason, where you could find the good, in it, the good pollen, and create something sweet and spiritually fruitful from it. And so, but in those instances, what I would do is just kind of articulate the ways in which I've done it with Marvel movies. I've done it with, popular music. I mentioned the Taylor Swift conversation I had yesterday. I've done it with her music before. And even if it's just saying like, even in its, even in its shortcomings in its expression of a moral universe or like authentic understandings of love and music or, the faults that you see in even these superhuman characters in comics and movies, like you can always find something of value in it. And then also, and when you engage with people, you do so in a way, like with the people that are actually participating in it, just, talk to them and see what their experience is. Because for a lot of people, like they engage in it because it's a meaningful way to connect to other people. It's not even about the story. I mean, the story is a fun thing to do, but for me, I got into Dungeons and Dragons because the world shut down because of COVID. And I was, you know, I was alone. Like, it was me and my dog at home for 3 months straight. This was my connection to other people, and I formed a community. Now, what's interesting is in the context, like, one of the guys was a parishioner of mine, but the other guys and gals, they're like totally secular people. And it was like 3 months in before they realized that I was a priest, because I just told them to call me Jonathan. And then one of the guy goes, I've been swearing for like 3 months to the priest. I'm like, I've got tons of brothers. Like, I'm used to hearing those words. Don't worry. But then, like, a lot of like, there was a handful of times like I offered like spiritual support and guidance to them in the midst of that. And for them, it was really meaningful for them to have that community as well. So, and I think like leaning into like not just the story or like what's going on in the world, but also like the experience of community that you get in participating in it is a worthwhile way to say like, yeah, this is okay. Don't worry about it. No one's going off the deep end because they're playing a game with their friends.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of, you know, the good old bait and switch, a little trap, the honeypot, but D&D would be a fantastic way to sneak in any Bible lessons you want to get out there in the world. That's all I'm saying, because experiencing a lesson is by far the easiest way to learn it. Somebody can sit there and read you the same story once a week for 4 years. But eventually you're just going to start tuning that out. You might internalize that message, or you might have never engaged with that message at all. But if you sneak it into D&D and you experience that, that'll work.
Yeah. Is it Romans 14 where Paul talks about the stronger Christian and weaker Christian? Where, not to say stronger means better or weaker means worse, but in certain areas, people have things that just bother them more. And they're not inherently right. They're not inherently wrong. In the same way some people eat meat, some people don't. Neither is right, neither is wrong. So in this scenario, they're not wrong to be concerned. Mm-hmm. They would be wrong to take that concern to the heights that a satanic panic took it. But that is legalism causing problems anyways, and Christians are really good at doing that anyways, so they didn't need Dungeons and Dragons to be legalistic in the world. So for these people, let them understand this is not a us or them mentality. There are things, some people watch horror movies, some people can't stand them, and I think any Christian who does is in danger. But you need to just have a dialogue. What is it about their lives that makes them think this is wrong? And establishing that dialogue, hey, it's not always going to work, but at least you attempted to bridge the divide. You attempted to work this out, and even just explain, what do you do in these sessions? There have been entire sessions where all we did was have an argument because my character was revealed to be working with another god, because the lore of the land is we all serve this one god, but his family secretly worshiped this one. And then it came out and people were upset in character because of what happened. And we got to learn how to have an argument based around that idea. And this lasted for 2 hours, and it was a ton of fun. It's one of the best sessions I've ever had. I also had a session that lasted 3 hours where I had my players, you know, interview people for jobs now that they had just become lords of an entire city. And it was so much fun seeing all these, how they interacted with these different people. And I've also had longer parts of sessions where people spent the better part of an hour trying to break down a door. It is, if people actually saw what D&D is actually like, I think for the most part, some of their fears would be assuaged. There are going to be people out there, no matter what you say, no matter what you do, they're going to be, this is evil, this is of the devil, and God's going to have to work on them in their own time. Just as much as he has to work on me day by day on the things that I have problems with. So just show a little love, show a little grace. Maybe something will come out of that. Maybe it's just one of those things you just don't talk about with each other. And that's okay.
Your early part, what you said at the beginning, I was sensing pastor you coming out. That was a very pastoral approach. I can see your training is going well, sir. So congratulations.
Thank you. I have much to learn still, but I'll take the compliment. So moving on from there, unless anyone else has anything they want to add. Okay. So now that we've discussed these different pantheons and the Christian response to them, like, is there anything valuable to be gained from studying them and how they're set up?
I would say that's trickier.
Okay.
Because it's kind of subjective. It depends on how good you are at taking lessons and removing them from their context. It depends on the story you're playing in, how well that is, you know, applied. You know, it's hard. Definitely, yes, it is possible. But yeah, no, man.
Father Jonathan?
Can I just gotta ask a clarifying question? Like, so you're saying, is there like value in like understanding them with like within a playing or a player's experience, or a value in studying them and how they're set up for, you know,
like, oh, in general.
In general. So I think I mean, I don't know. Like, you could say in some ways it's I don't know. For someone who's short on time, it might not be the most efficient use of my time to do something like that. But as someone who, like, I have multiple degrees in religious studies, I spent a lot of time and I know a lot about religions that I don't adhere to, the practices. My doctoral work is in spirituality, and practical theology. So I said, you know, I learned how to use social scientific methodologies to study theology and religious traditions. I engaged with spiritualities that were non-Christian and as part of my research, as like not even spiritualities that are non-religious. And so like as someone who would be interested in something like that, and the fact that ultimately these aren't like made up characters, so to speak. Like, they didn't just like most, you look through most of the deities list, like there is some real world equivalent to, like, even if it's just the name. And so there is value in that. I can't say that it's a bad thing. If you're really into it, like, I mean, I know an unnecessarily large amount of Marvel comics lore and different timelines and, you know, different universes. Like, I have like all that information in my head. I have been able to make lots of do good pastoral work in having this kind of eclectic pop culture knowledge. So I can't say that it's totally without use. But again, I don't know how well versed the creators of this lore were in actually real world religious traditions and how they form, or if these practices or activities are just kind of like, I don't want to say stereotypical, but maybe that's a good word, a shallow understanding of how religious traditions work. So maybe I'd have to probably explore more to see if there was a real religiosity within the pantheons of D&D, or if it's just kind of like, this is what religious people do, isn't it? And then they make these stories drawing from real world mythologies and stuff like that. So
yeah, I think these show is like what matters to the person and people who created them. Why are there so many gods of knowledge? Why are there so many gods of music or the sun or what have you? And if you apply this to real world religion, this is the same thing. What mattered to the people who were worshiping these deities? You don't really have a sea god, you know, from the Native American tribes in, you know, the Midwest, that I am aware of, at least. You're probably going to have a rain god or something like that. But to someone, the Polynesian people, the Maori people, they're going to have to worship gods like that. Because, you know, if I go out in my boat to go fishing or go to visit another island, I'm really hoping a storm doesn't show up. And when it comes to these D&D deities, yeah, obviously they're made up for fun, but what is it about the culture that created them in the first place? What did they take from to make these deities? What of themselves did they bring into the equation? There's a ton to learn from there. And that if you look at why they made them the way they did, it tells you kind of about that person's personality to an extent. Now, this is a smaller sample size versus the world, but it's not something, if you don't have the time for it, don't waste your time doing it. Like eventually we're going to be doing an episode, I think, on the deities of the Elder Scrolls series. If you want to go down a rabbit hole you'll never come back from, research that, which I have, and you're going to go, wow, people out there believe some kooky stuff. But those people exist in the world. Like earlier today, through no gain of my own, I don't know a Jain, J-A-I-N, I believe that's how it's pronounced. I don't know anyone who practices Jainism, but I studied it. I didn't have to do it for class. So, you know what? I know there's these gifts out there in the world. Why don't I research it? And I did it for fun. And I got to learn about a religious system that chances are I'll never meet anyone who practices Jainism. But if I do, I'm more prepared now than if I had just said, well, no one around me practices it, so I'm going to ignore it. And that's a practical thing we can do. And it's also fun to learn what other people think. Like, why do people believe in reincarnation? Is that a way to explain, well, I'm suffering right now on this measly end of the totem pole, or later on, next time, if I do enough good, if I practice nonviolence, if I don't harm animals or people or steal, then the next life, I'll feel better. I'll be more enlightened on this road. Like, that's something people go through. There are plenty of religions in the world that believe in something like that. So that's why I kind of stand on this. It's not the most important thing in the world to read up on your D&D lore and see which god practices what, or which demon lord there practices what. But it's fun, and they can also teach you about this world. You gentlemen have anything else before we start wrapping up?
Just a quick thought, kind of like piggybacking off what you said. There was a class that I took when I was in undergraduate at my seminary, and it was like great Christian thinkers, I think is what it was called. And we went through and kind of started with, you know, Paul and worked our way up to 20th century thinkers. And we talked about different Protestant, Catholic, Orthodox thinkers. And the question that was asked of every text that we read, because we would read the text and kind of get a sense of that religious thinker's perspective. It was like, what is the question that this text is trying to answer? Rather than say, is this text wrong or right? It's like, what's the need that this text is kind of trying to answer? And like, in this way, like what you're saying about the creators of D&D and stuff like that, like, or even like when you get down to it at the level of the DM, like the DM's choices in it, like what's the question or the need that, you know, his or her choice to run this campaign was. And so there's like, I think, you know, it provides us with an opportunity to commune with another person, even at a distance, in the same way like any art bears the mark of its creator. Like you can look at a painting and know who the painter is if you have any sense of painters, or you can hear a few lines of a song or a few words of poetry, and you can kind of get a sense of, you know, you like oh, that's definitely this artist, or that's definitely this musician. And so anything that we create bears the markings of who we are. It's like it contains part of our personal energies. So that just kind of like struck me as when you were talking.
Yeah. TJ, anything else?
If only we could ask Gary himself what he was thinking when he came up with the first pantheon.
It's a little late for that one, unfortunately. All right, listeners. If you're interested in some further questions, well, a further question we have on this, we're going to be asking for our Captivate and Patreon listeners a special bonus question. If you had to choose a patron god or goddess for yourself, who would it be and why? But we're done with this episode. It's time to wrap things up. Guys, you have a recommendation for the audience. It does not have to be about D&D or religion or anything like that. Just have at it.
Kaiju number 8.
Good choice.
That just got recommended to me. It's a good. It popped up on my like. I forget, is it on Crunchyroll or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The animation style is a little not exactly what I wanted, but it is. It really is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a lighthearted, wholesome slice of life, Horimiya, I think is the name of it. So,
Horimiya, good choice.
Just a sweet, sweet love story. So.
Oh yeah. For me, I happened to go to a used bookstore the other day, and I found something that is out of date completely at the time it was written. But I know for sure Father Jonathan would love this because we've had discussion before and no one else could see it, but I'm going to show him. I have The Monsters of Loch Ness, written by Roy Mackle. Dr. Roy Mackle in the 70s. I've been reading through it. Like I said, information is completely and utterly out of date, but it's so much fun. I adore it. Cryptozoology is just one of my favorite fandoms. So that's it for recommendations. Guys, I want to shout out some patrons real quick. Thank you for all that you do. Aaron Hardy, Daniel Sigmund, Trip Fuller, and James Barrett. You guys are the best. We'll continue saying that because we could not be able to do this whole thing without you. But remember, we're all a chosen people, a geekdom of priests.
Do you love systematic ecology as much as I do? Of course you do. So why don't you hop on over to the Systematic Ecology shop and get yourself some merch. We have clothing like hats, extra soft t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies. We even have glassware and mugs. One of my favorite coffee mugs that I use every morning is a coffee mug that has on it, share the faith, share the geek. Yeah, I get my geek on first thing every morning thinking of systematic ecology. And I know you need to hop over there and get you some merch, represent us out in the wild, out in the public, and let people know that you too like to share the faith and share the geek. Hey friends, this is your pal, Will Rose, and I have some exciting news. Systematic ecology will return to Theology Beer Camp this year, October 17th through the 19th in Denver, Colorado. And we hope that you can join us. We are part of Theology Beer Camp in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, at my home church in my hometown. And that year, Theology Beer Camp was called the God Pods. And then we were in Missouri, a part of the Geek Stage. Yes, we had a whole entire Geek Stage where we had workshops and speakers and had incredible conversations. And Theology Beer Camp last year was called the God Pods Strike Back. So you kind of see where this is going. And so this year, the theme is the return of the God Pods. And so if you head over to Eventbrite and follow God Pods 2024, or hop over to Instagram, follow it there. And if you enter promo code Geekshire, you see what we did there? Yeah. Wilbo Baggins approves. If you enter Geekshire, all caps, no spaces, you'll get $25 off your ticket price. Geekshire, all caps, no spaces, Geekshire. Yes, yeah, say it with me, Geekshire. Enter that, you get money off your ticket, and you can join us and hang out and drink beer and have great food. And even if you don't drink beer, you can have incredible food and beverages and conversations with your favorite hosts here at Systematic Ecology. The Geek Stage is growing. I'm proud of that, and we thank Trip for this opportunity. We hope to see you at Theology Beer Camp, the Return of the God Pods 2024.